Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, all of them were technically dinosaurs, though. Even the pterosaur were dinosaurs.
So. It's a fantasy setting. That I think that's awesome. Taking it back.
Yeah, please.
Okay, well, I already surprised you because we've been recording for 9 seconds.
Dang. Okay, cool. Okay, countdown now, please.
Stone cold. Five.
No, sorry, could you start from 15?
15, 14, 13, 12.
Four boys here. hi, everybody. It's me, your host, Ethan. Been a hot minute since I did an episode, but we're back. Holding the breath did some brain damage. I'm slower to write them now, basically what it is. with me, of course, is Jimmy.
Hi, James Miller. Nice to meet you.
And Pity. Jimmy and Pity.
Hey, Pete Miller. Happy to meet you.
James O'Donohue and Pete Miller. Never dox us. hey, everybody. As you can see from the title, we're talking about Pathfinder lore today. What that is. If you have no idea what Pathfinder is,
I can guess.
We'll give it a quick intro. Jamie's going to guess and explain it to us before.
Okay. It's a GPS system, but before we had GPSs, so it's kind of like Mapfinder. Just have to go on the internet and use Pathfinder and you print out where you want to go.
You 3D print a Nissan Pathfinder and it just drives you. It drives you wherever you need to go. Even if like, it's just like you're on a college campus and you're trying to like map to your next lecture hall, the Nissan Pathfinder will take you there. Yeah. This episode, of course, sponsored by Nissan. So
Nissan Pathfinder, the new 2023 Nissan Pathfinder. That's how the lore boys safely get themselves to work.
And the voice of the GPS of the Nissan Pathfinder is, of course, the robot Pathfinder from Apex Legends.
This episode of the lore boys sponsored by Apex Legends. New season 9 dropping like a RoboCop looking motherfucker or whatever. Didn't read the article.
Pathfinder, short and sweet. I guess actually before we get that, this week's episode is a patron request, so it's from Mad Max. It was originally requested by Dead Man then David, but because Mad Max is paying the bills over here, he gets first rights to that
one,
guys.
So, credit.
But it sure does take a village to get me to write a script, it turns out. So thanks for everyone who requested it. If you guys want to request an episode, we do have a channel for it in the Lore Boys Discord. There's a link in the description of this episode, as well as a link to the Patreon, which will, as just mentioned, we'll get you a tiny little bump in likelihood that we'll pick one of your requests, actually.
Yeah, we actually have three new ones here, which I want to shout out because I forgot about these guys, and then Jamie forgot about these guys, so we're putting them in now. So a big shout out to Smoochie, Squilliam Fancy Son, and Alexis Robitaille for being our freshest, our hottest and freshest patrons.
Yeah.
Despite the fact they've been cooling on the windowsill now for 12 days, and that's our bad.
We can eat them without burning the roof of our mouth, finally.
That's true,
So thanks to all the patrons. If you want to become a patron, head to patreon.com/loreboys or follow the link in the description of this episode. We have a couple different tiers there that you can get in on the ground floor. It's still the ground floor. We're not really building up. We're building out, like the Edmonton Mall.
We're a bungalow, and goddamn, if we can get an indoor submarine ride, that'd be fucking sweet.
So I played Pathfinder with you, Ethan. You were my DM in one campaign, and then a guy named Rob DM'd another campaign, and I've tried both a cleric and a ranger, And I remember the ranger being badass because I had like a heavy crossbow, and in one turn, if I already had one loaded, I could shoot and then load and then shoot another. And it did like so much damage at like level one or whatever. It was crazy.
Yeah. So you guys have both played Pathfinder, actually, because
We Be Goblins, right?
Yeah, our first charity stream, we did the one-shot adventure We Be Goblins, which is published by Paizo, I believe. So, I mean, really at its core, for anybody who no idea what we're talking about, Pathfinder is called a fantasy role-playing game. It's very similar to Dungeons & Dragons in that it basically is Dungeons & Dragons. It's created by Paizo Publishing. Why I say it is basically Dungeons & Dragons is because uses the same D20 core rule set. Was first published in 2009 under the open game license that was still supported for Dungeons & Dragons 3.5e. So there's been a couple iterations of Dungeons & Dragons over the year. We're on fifth edition right now. First edition came out in the 80s. Gary Gygax published it, right?
So they went through these... Fourth edition was out. You're like, I don't like fourth, so we're gonna play Pathfinder or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the general consensus. I was dating a girl who had the same sentiment. That's like how I found out about it. She was like, fourth ed sucks. It's all about miniatures. It's too easy. We play Pathfinder now, and we never did together. But yeah. I remember that being like a thing that she would do when I wasn't around.
It's kind of the community consensus. You know, it's the redheaded stepchild is 4E in a lot of senses. Just. Generally considered like too grindy, combat's really slow, it doesn't leave you like a lot of like freedom, I guess, as a player. And when they announced fourth edition was when Paizo actually decided to create Pathfinder. And the reason they did that was because the game license was changing, so it was really like unrestricted before then. Wizards of the Coast was really just like, hey, anybody can take our core rule set, make your own setting, and you can like fully publish it or whatever. So there was a ton of spinoffs of like second edition, third edition, 3.5 edition, which Pathfinder happens to be a really successful one. It's probably the second most popular in the traditional fantasy tabletop RPG sphere. So it's essentially a D&D spinoff, like using like full, like all the D&D rules and everything. They just created their own universe or multiverse to house it. Basically.
From what I understand, Wizards has gotten much newer and more dangerous lawyers since then, have they not?
I mean, they got bought by Hasbro, so I'll let you decide.
Oh, yeah.
They're a Hasbro subsidiary. But yeah, I mean, it's a business for sure, and 5e is great. They've done some incredible things for, you know, like player engagement. They finally just acquired the people who were under license making D&D Beyond, so... a lot of the community is now hoping that if you buy a paperback version of a book, you get the digital version kind of included. Like you can get a code or whatever with
cool, yeah.
Not announced or anything. That's just, we're all hoping for it. Because I love to have the physical books, but the online D&D Beyond is just so goddamn convenient. It's like hard to justify not getting it. So I buy two of a lot of them.
I know Pokemon does that. I think that's how it works. Because I know like I'll watch Max Mofo Pokemon just open packs on YouTube. I find it very relaxing. And there's a QR code that comes in every pack. And I think you can redeem that for like a digital version of that pack.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Well, I think. I have no idea. Yeah.
If you do it the other way around, if you just only buy the digital versions and you get a big enough printer, then you can always have both, right?
So. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like an underground like Victorian printing press where you're like inserting all the little like blocks the letters on them.
They're like 200 page textbooks. Like it costs you more in printer ink than the cost of just buying the book outright.
That's why you go to your local library and just use all their equipment. Yeah. I remember going in like in university and like printing out so many things because there was one printer that if you asked the person then you didn't have to get charged for it.
Oh, damn, cool. Dude.
Yeah, so I'd print out, like, entire chapters of psychology books and take them home with me, so I didn't have to stay at the
people's librarian.
Yeah, exactly.
Karl Marx, working at the library. Go figure.
Clip-on glasses, like, over his nose.
Yep.
Oh, hold on, I gotta stop in here and print something. No, that's Ayn Rand's library. Don't go in there.
Oh, no! Completely fucking empty, obviously. Yeah.
Just Atlas shrugged. Every bookshelf just full of copies. So Pathfinder, similar to D&D for anybody who doesn't know, it's a game you sit at a table, you play make believe with your friends, and there's some like bare bones rules which kind of form that. Now, I still to this day really like Pathfinder just because it's open source. So like anybody can kind of publish like extra adventures, extra classes for it. So there's like so many class options. There's so much you can do with it because it there's so many rules to it, which is why I tend to not play it because it's much harder to explain like the Pathfinder rules than 5e. 5e is like so seamless and so simple. But with like 4th E, it was like just as complicated to explain all the rules. And then it was combat was just like also a lot slower. And there were also just like more restrictions, whereas Pathfinder tends to be more open. So still really enjoy Pathfinder. But 5e, if you're looking to get into D&D, 5e is definitely almost definitely your best bet. Don't start with Pathfinder like I did, really. But,
so like we were joking before. I was like, I'm going to look up everything before you can tell me about it or Pathfinder, right? And I saw like a couple locations like Galarion and Aslant or something. And like, how much of Pathfinder lore and D&D lore have overlap, or is it just the rule set that is overlap?
Yeah, it's just the rule set. So the universe is entire. I mean, so and we'll get into it, but like, because they copied the rule set, some of like the monsters are the same. Like, like Pathfinder also has dragons, and they also work the same way, where you have like chromatic and metallic dragons. Right. Just because like that had been a thing in the tabletop community since the first D&D version, essentially.
Is there slimes that every time you chop it, it turns into two slimes and then into four slimes? And
there absolutely is. You don't use slicing damage against the slime.
Right.
Do you have to use fire? Because I don't think would a blunt weapon just like splatter it and then you get a bunch of misshapen slime clones?
No, you roll it like a rolling pin and then put it into a pizza oven to kill it.
Yeah, no. Bludgeoning damage is fine. Piercing damage is fine. And I think most magical damage is fine. Depends on the slime as well. There's lots of different slime types. But
is there chromatic slimes?
Yeah, they're the good aligned ones. Yeah,
there's like metal slime in Dragon Quest, which is a Japanese game I am not familiar with yet.
I played a couple of those old ones. I really like those old RPGs.
So we're gonna talk about the universe, and I don't really think much of it overlaps, other than some like really broadly, it's a multiverse. There's like these different planes of existence, essentially. So a lot of the cosmology, I guess, is very similar, but it is unique in some ways. And I didn't dwell too much on the cosmology because I thought the actual history of the main planet, Galarion, is more interesting. So I guess let's just jump in, right? So starting from the absolute macro, the Pathfinder multiverse, known as the Great Beyond, shares with D&D the system, like I said, of various planes of existence, with humans. A lot of primary actions for campaigns revolves around the material plane. So again, same as D&D. There's also, there's humans, there's elves, there's dwarves, there's gnomes, there's halflings, there's, like we said before, dragons. So
a lot of similar. There's no talking dinosaurs? Like in the Green Valley and the mysterious beyond?
I mean, yeah, so I will say the universe in Pathfinder seems a lot busier. Like, it seems like there's a lot more planets with a lot more going on. Where, like, in the solar system of Galarion, kind of the primary solar system in the material plane, which has like multiple galaxies. Like, it canonically, it has like different galaxies within it, within this like universe and all with these planets. And within that solar system, there's Galarion, and there's, at least two other planets that have like life on them, essentially, in the solar system itself. So it seems much busier, basically. We're going to talk about multiple creatures here, which kind of jump between planets at different times as well.
Okay.
The Great Beyond is modeled as two distinct spheres, so inner and outer, which again is shared with D&D, if you guys remember from some D&D episode we've done.
An inner sphere, eh? I've never heard of that.
connecting them is the astral sea. The outer sphere contains 9 known planes and is where the gods of the multiverse reside. Heaven and Hell, Abaddon and Asylum, the Abyss and Nirvana, these are all planes within the outer sphere. The inner sphere contains the material plane I mentioned earlier, as well as the elemental planes of air, water, earth, and fire, the astral plane, ethereal plane, shadow plane, and the plane known as the first world.
Okay.
Okay.
So, genies and elementals both maintain that the elemental planes existed first in the inner sphere, and it was from their energies combined with creation forge, known as the positive energy plane, that the gods and their primordial servants were able to create other planes. So, at first, the inner sphere was just kind of chaos. It seems like the outer sphere already existed because we had gods at the time. Right. And so they realize, like, oh, if we take Creation's Forge, which is kind of the mix of these elemental planes, like kind of at their nexus where they're kind of touching, mix it with positive, a bit of positive energy, you know, just a pinch of negative energy, we can create new planes, essentially.
A little bit of negative energy. You got to keep the vibes grounded. Yeah, you don't want to get, exactly, get a big head.
Yeah. There's got to be balance, right? I think my grandparents had inner sphere problems, and there wasn't enough balance. They were falling.
Yeah. There's First World, which was a plane. Then there was Brave New World, which was a plane where everyone just took Soma and did orgies all the time. The first of these fresh planes is aptly named the First World. So the First World is essentially the Feywild from D&D, where it's the land of the Fey. It's said that it was a dry run of creating the material plane, where the gods were like, oh, we want to create... They had this idea for like the material plane where they wanted to have as like a staging ground. It's like a giant dollhouse, a dollhouse the size of a universe.
Well, okay.
So they create the First World with their servants, these custodians they call Elohim. When the WikiHow guide on how to create a plane was done, they kind of like looked at the First World and said like, oh, I like this bit. This tree is too purple, so we're not going to do trees where yeah. we're in our
tree
new place.
Tree is too purple. First World problems.
Yeah.
So the gods gave the First World to the Elohim to do with as they please and kind of just continue their wanton building, and then created the material plane for themselves.
Okay.
As for why the gods did this, it's obviously kind of unknowable. We know in modern day, you know, quote unquote, Galarian, the world is used as a staging ground for them to test their champions. They get some good worship out of it. They generally meddle in the affairs of mortals, as, you know, fantasy gods do. But back at the dawn of time, obviously things weren't so well documented. So it seems like a lot of them created this universe within a larger universe, and then just kind of let each other kind of go to different reaches of it. And, you know, I'm going to meddle with this planet, I'm going to meddle with that planet. Does seem like Galarian is kind of a nexus for a lot of gods, where like a lot of them ended up here and end up, you know, meddling in various affairs.
What's a nexus? What is a nexus? Is it like a home, magic home place?
Nexus
like
is like
central point, basically.
Nexus.
Yeah. If you think of like a bunch of lines, like if you think of like eight lines all drawn, like where they would all converge, kind of like a nexus.
Okay.
Where things like overlap or converge.
I only knew it in the StarCraft sense. For it's like your base as the
the main building as the Protoss.
But that is also true, like, because the Nexus is like the central, the most important point of a thing. Like the Nexus is the central hub in Demon Souls, because that's where all the teleporters lead out of, right?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Okay. Central hub. Got it.
Yeah. So within the nearly infinite material plane, orbiting an otherwise unremarkable yellow sun is Galarian, planet prime of the Pathfinder setting.
Okay.
As we said a few times now. I would call it, I know when I wrote that sentence, I'll upload the script for the patrons on Friday.
Yeah.
But every P is capitalized in that sentence.
Very nice.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Or all,
did you,
all
did
of
you get
people.
A little chill, that little alliteration chill yeah. down your spine? Like,
So
tactless teeming poles turns tolerance to tired taboos or whatever.
Exactly. That's a shout out to Jamie and I's Drunken Night listening to music on Discord the other day.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So I'd call it Pathfinder's Earth, but Earth in Pathfinder lore is canonized. So there was an adventure path called Rasputin Must Die by Brandon Hodge. And Earth cool. is canonically the home of Baba Yaga. So
she's back, baby.
Exactly. It's officially canon because Baba Yaga exists in this universe and she officially comes from Earth as well.
That's the Eastern European witch that lives in the woods?
Yeah, the old Russian witch, basically.
She's got the chicken leg house.
Yeah.
Right.
And or the mortar and pestle that she flies around in, right? Is that the same one?
Yep, same one.
Okay.
Two cars, man. She's living it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I mentioned it. We said it's like one of the most recurring characters in like any folklore is Baba Yaga. So I guess it kind of makes sense that she keeps coming up now that we've talked about her. But
yeah.
What is it? Bader Meinhof phenomenon where you notice something. And once you've learned about something, you notice it a lot more, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We research it. Now that we know what it is, we see it all the time and everything.
You get a Honda Civic, you see Honda Civics everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
That also, if you're just like poor in Quebec, you see them everywhere as well.
Yeah.
with a matte black hood that doesn't match the teal body.
Ethan used to drive a Civic, and we had a Civic salute. Which is, I forgot how to
describe this. Try and describe this.
So, oh my God.
So the way that you would do it is you would make a C.
Take a screenshot.
So you make a C with one hand, a V a V where your nose would be, and then a C on the other side of your eyes. So your eyes are the eyes in the Civic. And the C goes next to your I, V, and then C. So we would do this when we would drive by other Civics, but they would just
Why don't you do it, and I'll screenshot it and post it in general without explanation.
Ethan's better.
Like that? Okay. I don't remember. I used to do this to people all the time when I was driving. It's very dangerous, but...
All right, I got it. And all right, I'm dropping the bomb right now live on air. Yeah.
Okay, good.
We thought it was very clever that we use own... eyes, like ocular eyes.
Eyes for the letters.
Get it? Yeah.
So on Galarian, maybe at the will of the gods, or maybe just by happenstance, creatures of the material plane settle or take notice of this newly created world. Like I said, it does kind of become a nexus at some point, but at this point in what's known as the Age of Creation, things are relatively quiet. There's probably life, but probably simple life or non-intelligent.
Yeah. Okay. Jawless fish. They're doing the regular thing. They're just like, let's not go too crazy. Exactly. Just big bugs and algae, please.
Yeah. Yeah. All of them were technically dinosaurs, though. Even the pterosaur. We're dinosaurs. So
it's a fantasy setting. I think that's
taking it back. I think since we both log into the Loreboys account, it thinks I'm you on YouTube, and I get a lot of like, check out the Cambrian explosion and all the weird animals that lived then.
But I don't watch YouTube on the Loreboys channel.
Well, no, but you watch it on your own channel, but you log on to yours and you log on to the Loreboys, right? And I log on to mine and I log on to the Loreboys. So we have a middle connection.
Are we getting like crop dusted with each other's algorithms? Like,
yeah.
What the fuck? Is that why I started watching Steve MRE 1989?
Probably.
Could have been, yeah.
God damn it.
Because Instagram, listen to the bonus episode on the Patreon, but Instagram is clearly reading your Pokemon cards in your Instagram story.
Yes, they are.
Google is definitely seeing like, oh, you both signed into this account. You guys probably know each other.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because only after I made like that one push like a couple of weeks ago, I started getting cool old animals. Honestly, I had way too much. Like, I was tired with my current recommendations, so I welcomed the old animals.
Paleontology is great, dude. Yeah. But also, the internet was a mistake. I think we say it every episode now, and there we go.
Yeah. It's our latest catchphrase. We went from put that on a piece of corn to the internet was a mistake.
Yeah.
Number one.
Number one mistake on the internet or something like
that. Lore boys.
So one of the first races to inhabit Galarian will be the Algolthu. Now, I did say to you guys either before the episode started, maybe during the episode, but this, of all fantasy settings that we've covered, this one has the most bullshit fantasy names of anything. So nice. Algolthu is spelled Algholth. So just throwing that out there because it's too fun to not.
The Ashley with the E-I-G-H in the name. That is,
And these guys are basically the same. They can also be called Aboleth, I believe, or Aboleth.
Aboleth.
Yeah, they're Abolists. No,
God. They park in the handicap spaces, and that was the first great sin of the play.
Aboleths, Aboleth, which are like, I guess, known monsters from D&D as well.
Okay.
So these guys are same creatures. They share. They also share the name Aboleth in Pathfinder. Just are, I think, more often referred to as Algolthu, or more correctly, maybe referred to as Algolthu. And then too many people were like, "This name is dumb. We're just calling them Aboleths." but you guys can click the first spoiler tagged image because that's what we're looking at right now. Though they lived in the planet's oceans, they did not evolve from simple aquatic life. They're alien in most senses, large interstellar fish capable of sailing through the dark tapestry of space. They're noted in a few places as one of the first creatures in the material plane, period, to gain intelligence and build their own civilization. So I don't, Jamie, why don't you take a crack at describing this creature for the listeners?
I was watching one of these YouTube videos today where they described the first animal that had blood ever. And the fossils in which they had, it looked a lot like this. It was a fish with like long stringy, what do you call them? Tentacles. So this, it looks like a fish with like, it has a dorsal fin, kind of like a shark, but more like a smaller fish, I would say. And then it has like the, like tentacles all around. It has six eyes, like a spider kind of. In the front, red eyes. It's a green fish. It doesn't have like the front arms of a fish, like the front two flappers. It only has back flappers instead of the.
It has
front
its flap. Tentacles.
Yeah, it has tentacles. Yeah,
I think it's fair to say it's very Lovecraftian. Like it's very much like a Cthulhu or something like that. And that's it's supposed to be like a cosmic horror essentially.
I mean, if you're watching the same YouTube videos that Jamie and I are being recommended about ancient Earth, 600 million years ago was a fucking nightmare as far as whatever animals were supposed to look like.
Yeah.
I think of it as like the early game, like if you were, because like you don't have like these apex predators yet that you could that could kill other stuff, so everyone's just figuring it out. So even if you're not optimal, you can still survive. Like, yeah,
evolution was learning how to draw, dude. It was crazy.
That's so fun. I wish we could like redo those things over again just to see what other kind of wacky shit would come up, but
just a bunch of angry stick men trying to kill each other and fuck in the ocean is crazy.
Yeah. Like sharks with the buzz saws and then like just like unnecessary limbs, teeth where they don't belong, and like just fun, you know? It's fun.
Yeah, you can't try cool strats. Like you can't try cool builds like a shark or a saw blade mouth. You can't do it anymore. It's not viable.
It's not viable, exactly, because the other sharks already have used their resources so perfectly that if you try and make a buzzsaw shark, it's going to die before the 6-minute mark, you know?
I've never seen a fossil of the entire thing's imprint, but I've seen, like, the jawbone. So it may just be some guy who discovered, like, a coiled tooth ring and was just like, that was inside a shark.
Yeah. I think we talked about it on your paleontology episode. They didn't know where to put it at first. They're like, does it go on the top of the head? Does it go on the jaw? Does it go on the tail? And eventually they decided the jaw.
It's a heliopryon or some shit. I remember somebody dropped the name in chat. I can't remember.
Yeah.
So from the adventure path, the lost outpost for Pathfinder, we know that the first of the Algolthu simply awoke one day in the primordial soup of an unknown planet. One day, just like consciousness, like puberty in a 13-year-old boy, awakening, you know, something about feet. They're just like, oh shit, I'm awake, basically.
What do you think primordial soup would taste like? You hear about it a
fishy.
Lot.
Actually, considering people probably know what it was like made of, like you could probably Google what the primordial soup was made of, so I guarantee you can find out exactly what it tastes like. It's probably acidic. It's probably sour, guess.
Send it to Steve Emmer. So what caused...
Oh, and now we got a nice thing here from 420 million years ago.
And he still fucking eats it.
Still like a cigarette and two pieces of gum and like a plastic wrap.
It's just eating like, I don't know, like dust at that point, I guess.
Yeah.
So
I keep pulling you out. What would primordial soup taste like? They figured it out on Reddit and it would taste like pain. It would incinerate your tongue before you got anywhere near it, but by some magic, you could manage to survive it. It would taste a lot like rocks. So there you go.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think they're saying primordial soup is like the magma then, I guess? That wouldn't make any sense.
It was a liquid. This is disgusting for another time.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. We'll do it in our next episode.
Reddit's done. The internet is a mistake. Next episode, primordial soup lore, finally. So what caused this being to wake up is known and unknown in the sense that there was some, quote, cataclysm in the sky above, which, like, snapped this thing into consciousness. What that cataclysm was, what it was caused by, is kind of unknown. I like the idea that, like, there was some, you know, dark god that was like, I'm going to wake this thing up because, you know, it's going to be a cosmic horror for me, basically.
Yeah,
but unconfirmed at time of recording. Each and every Algolthu after this first one remembers this event in something called their cellular memory. So it's cool. It's very much like this is actually Assassin's Creed lore, where you can go back into your genes and remember
your genetic
something
memory.
Your ancestors saw. Same principle, I guess.
Okay. I think there's some of that in people too. Like they say like.
Fear of snakes is like a is like a monkey thing that like still lives inside of us, right?
Sorry, not to cut.
So similar, but this is like they remember it. Like it's an actual memory for all of them, basically. So it's not like it's not like they all remember seeing a snake as a caveman, basically. Like hundreds of millennia later.
That's
cool. How I knew that I was going through puberty was that dream.
I was Unga Bunga and saw a snake. In the moments following the cataclysm, whatever it was, the Algolthu realized that they were the only creature on the planet that they could find capable of conscious thought, and so formed the.
Because you've got like just like squid fish, just like. Holy fuck, dude, did you see that? And he just, like, turns and, like, smash cut to, like, the coral that he's been hanging out with, and it doesn't react, and he's just, like, smash cut back.
I mean, exactly that, dude. Just like turns to his best friend Algae, you know? Like,
yeah.
Just bubbles non-committally when he asks if he saw that. They realize they're the only creature around that's capable of conscious thought. They form a tenet of their unflinching doctrine, known as the dictums. The first dictum is all life exists to be controlled, presumably by them. They're like, no one else is going to control.
Guys.
Yeah, exactly. They're evil pretty much right off the bat. So
yeah.
Death is a good form of control for sure. So if something's acting out, you know, you can just kill it. But they soon realize that they're also mortal, like the helpless fish that they've been killing. So they've been eating. And they've been, you know, surviving, but much like us, it seems like they're aging. So they develop a way to consume their prey or prepare their prey in some way, use magic, who knows, that allows them to bolster their own life forces. So as long as they continue to consume, they can be basically immortal.
Oh no, they had to eat the poor kelp that they were just talking to.
Hey Algae, if you don't want me to eat you, just say something, buddy. Well, okay. So as this creature continues to glut itself, eventually it gets too dang fat, begins to split. The life force within it grew, and the Algolthu split into many. So we have reproduction. It just seems to consume enough life force or spirit force or something in Pathfinder lore, like the. The soul is magic. Magic is like harvested from souls, basically. And there's a whole like cosmology image that I had in this draft that I was going to give you guys. I was like, this is going to get them way too off track, which is going to take forever, which happened anyway. So, but it seems like they're able to just like take the essence of the creatures they're eating to keep themselves alive and then also to split into copies of themselves. And that's why
what
all
is
of them.
Called? Mitosis?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Something okay. like that.
That's what you say after you stub your foot.
Yeah, and if, when you're talking to your sister, yeah.
I hit my toes this.
My toes.
Stop. That's going on to the loser list, dude.
Yeah. Well, try that one with analysis, but you...
How you feeling, anal, sis?
Yeah, or anal, why, sis? Yeah.
So they figure out reproduction. That's why all of them remembers that, like, you know, their own big bang of that cataclysm in the sky, because they when they're copied, they're like literal copies of themselves. So every Algolthu forever will always have that memory, like vividly in their head. They don't like elephants; they don't forget.
Okay.
So it's growing, it's splitting, it's reproducing or as best it can, I guess. And it's thriving, honestly.
Nice.
Like how boss this thing's this thing's out here. They seem to share some sort of consciousness. I don't think it's like a hive mind. So I do think they are individual, but since they split from like exact copies of themselves, obviously like personality wise, they're very much in agreement, and they kind of do view their own lives in a lot of sense as less relevant. Like you know, give up the one for the many seems to be like a pretty pervasive feeling throughout the story. So they seed their planet with life because, as we said, life exists to be controlled. So they want more life for them to control and for them to also continue to subsist on. They form a global empire, as near as we can tell, the first empire, quote unquote, in the known universe, run by their slaves, which they ruled over for untold millennia. You know, call it 10, call it 100, doesn't really matter. Eventually, all parties must end, of course. This one did with a violent slave revolt. Classic, huh? so while the Algolfi
were... that was more common, frankly.
Honestly, rise up. We're all slaves. While the Algolfi were powerful, their slaves were cunning and vastly outnumbered the Algolfi. So at some point in the breeding fish to feed on, they made smart fish by mistake. Didn't realize it in their arrogance and their hubris. Who knows? Maybe they were intentionally doing it so the smart fish could like build pyramids for them and stuff.
Or they did it, yeah. Or they did it on purpose. Like it's like, well, I don't want to do the math to like have a stable structure. So what we're gonna do is breed like a race of intelligent engineering fish.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, I don't really want to solve problems between them either. So then you've got your
Pythagoras fish.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a fish, but they took the headphone jack away.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, when the fish 11 rises up against us, then I'll start for it.
Exactly.
And Steve Jobs threw a fish and no bubbles came out of it when he threw it in the aquarium.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's how we do it. It's that's proper smart fish.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, they're outnumbered. They can't really hold ground against their slaves. They're driven further back. The slaves rounded them up. We're slaughtering them wholesale whenever they got a chance. Just like, hey, we know you guys are bastards. We're only going to kill you. No negotiating, you know. Desperate. Some Algolfi gave themselves up and began to merge back together. Kind of like I said before, give up yourself for the many. They form these more powerful beings, excuse me. So Algolfi, stupid name like that. When they, you get a bunch of them together, like a rat king, jam them all together until they fuse. They're just called Veiled Masters, which is... That's just such an easy and simple name compared to Algolfi.
Yeah.
Veiled Masters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. So we essentially have like CEOs now, I guess, or we have the board basically of these beings. They're like smarter, they're more magically powerful. There's a lot of benefits to being a Veiled Master, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's
they'll have more shares of the primordial sea, basically.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So it's these few who begin working on an exit strategy for them and who would eventually crack the code on interstellar travel. So these are the guys who finally figured it out. And they're working on this. The wiki said for like, I didn't find the source, but the wiki was like for at least like 80 years, they were basically just working on this while like the slave revolts were just still happening, still killing Algolfi by the score, by the hundreds, by the thousands. Mm. In the end, fewer than a thousand Algolfi led by a handful of Veiled Masters remain. So, you know, there's like a five kings and, whatever, like 800 Reeve, basically.
It's like a zero dawn situation. You gotta like, they're locked about just throwing lives at a situation. And so they can eventually hopefully figure out how to save themselves.
Yeah.
I can't imagine when they were making this fantasy setting in whatever 2009, they could have foreseen that it is exactly what billionaires are currently doing with burning the atmosphere to cinders and also experimenting with getting themselves to space.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they know they need to leave, basically. The Veiled Masters have been working for decades, like I said, on two powerful glyphs. So it seems like the most powerful magic that they have access to is somehow tied to these glyphs or like runes or like some form of writing that they can do, which can hold very, very powerful magic.
Okay.
The first, when completed, opened portals to a bunch of other worlds for them to go to, seed, populate. You can guess what one of the worlds was.
Earth?
Well, yeah, Galarian.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe it was Earth too. I don't know. We don't know what lies in the deep. We know less about the ocean floor than we do about the moon, right?
Yeah.
All of them, except for a lone Veiled Master, left through these portals, through these doorways.
Okay.
The last, not wanting to give up the control they valued so highly, remained behind to activate the second glyph. This one, when activated, would destroy their world utterly.
Oh.
Kind of like I said at the top of their little bit, death is an effective means of control as well. You know, so okay, they just said, if we can't have it, no one can. Blew it all up. Maybe also feared that they would, you know, be followed or something like that. I don't know. So they arrive on Galarian. When they do, however, they encounter another race already there. But more on them after the break.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. I actually started recording. I thought you were going to cut me off. 5.
No, okay, I know. Four. I know. I know that you're expecting me to cut you
off. Okay. 3, 2. Okay. 1. Yeah.
On 1 or on go? How are we doing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Take it to the top. Peter messed it up. Jeez, Louise.
No, yeah. Sorry.
14, 13.
12. Welcome back, everybody. Obviously, we've been recording for too long. The Xiomorn, here's the second difficult name to say. So Xiomorn. Xiomorn?
What?
Xiomorn. Xiomorn? We'll say Xiomorn.
Or it might be she?
Yeah, that's what I was when I was writing it, I was like, I'm going to go she. And then I said it once out loud just now, and I said, I don't like that. I'm going Xiomorn.
Okay.
The Xiomorn are a race.
Yeah. And she moves.
Yeah, she mourns, sis. The Xiomorn are a race of primeval elemental outsiders originating from the elemental plane of Earth. So okay. Rock, the plane of rock and stuff.
Cool. Anybody out there, any young writers out there, that is too complicated. So don't do that.
They were created at the dawn of time by the elemental lord Sarazul. They were four-armed creatures made of stone with an insectile head, thorax, and upper limb.
Cool.
Some are slightly bigger with four legs, while the smaller ones have only two legs. And you guys can unspoiler the next two images in the Discord.
Go ahead, Pete.
Take a crack at describing those.
Yeah, the top one is like a beetle centaur made entirely of like emeralds, which is very fucking cool. And then the one below that is an angrier beetle wearing like a cloak, but also with like a glowing emerald core. Very cool.
I'm so glad you pointed out the emerald core, because Sarazul is what's known as a lord of the plane of Earth, basically an elemental lord. There's 8 in total, or at least when these were created, so 4 good and 4 bad. And Sarazul specifically is like the lord of gemstones.
Oh, okay, cool.
So why don't Jamie, you could start. The reward for this will be $100 if you can tell me how many Xiomorns were created. And it's got to be exact, no over under.
Like, what's can I get a clue? Like, is it the different types of stones, or just how many of the dudes
How many of the dudes were created? It's just a random shot in the dark. And I'm only asking you to go through this exercise to highlight something ludicrous that I'm going to say in a second. So don't overthink. Okay. You're not going to get the $100.
I was going to video game say 8, because that's a good number.
Okay. 8. Peter, how many Xiomorns do you think were created?
I mean, I'll bet 50. Because you kind of buried the lead there, were saying it's ludicrous. I'm going to say something stupid, like 1 trillion.
Okay, we'll split the difference. So it was 65,536.
Cool.
No more, no less. exactly. Wow. 65,536 Xiomorns were created because Sarazul had found a sublime jewel in the plane of Earth, and that was exactly how many facets it had. Oh. So she decided to create her children exactly that many, one for each facet.
I almost said 12, like one for every one of the birth stones or whatever. Like, yeah. No, nothing close.
Like, tell us in Discord what your birth stone is.
Yeah. And then your credit card number, and don't forget the number on the back.
That'd be a tragedy.
Yeah. So while appreciating her fledgling creations, however, another lord of the plane of Earth, one of the evil ones, known as Erzul, the fossilized king, would betray Sarazul. He trapped her within a crystal, which would come to be known as the Moaning Diamond, and the Zeomorn would grow up motherless and with a wicked stepfather in her place. Okay. I like to think Loreboy's canon, the Moaning Diamond was that very crystal that she loved with all the facets, that one for each that she created her children, but that's not written anywhere.
That's like
that
I
could find anyway.
It's if they trapped us in a wiki page.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh God, what kind of
hell
would that be?
When we die, maybe that's what'll happen. Is we'll live on in a wiki page, guys.
I don't want to be imprisoned forever next to a muted, tiny version of a Screen Junkies video. Okay.
Yeah.
Like wikia.fandom always has that shit bypass ad blocker or whatever, where it's always just like, oh, an honest trailer of Deathloop. I'm like, I don't give a
flying. And you can't even rest easy because it says citation needed next to your name for all eternity. It's like,
your first mistake is using ad blocker, dude. That shit's owned by Google. Doesn't do anything.
I have the green one, the green shield. I don't know which one that is. Yeah.
Okay.
I use post-it notes on the sides of my screen, so when I see an ad, I just kind of move it right over on top.
I only use my computer with the monitors turned off. So Erzul traps Sarazul and basically presents himself to the Zeomorn, and the Zeomorn seemed to not have like a good memory of Sarazul, so it seemed to happen like right as she was creating them, she got tricked, or it took them a while to come to like get object permanence and stuff, you know, whichever it was, it's pretty unclear. But Erzul steps in as the wicked stepfather, like I said. He shows them a false image of their own annihilation, which was actually from another race of people who are undergoing their own extinction event far across the universe. And he basically says, like, this is going to happen to you guys unless, you know, I can help you, basically. And then he says, I can help you, but I need more power to show you the solution. I can feel it's there, but I just can't quite get it. So you guys need to kill a quarter of yourselves. I'll let you choose them. Pick 25%. Kill them, I'll absorb their life essence, their soul, and then I'll have enough power to help you guys. The Zeomorn are like, that's really fucked up, dude. Like, why would you even suggest that?
That reminds me, when I read The Lottery in fifth grade, I was like 11. It was a very strange time to present that to children.
it is heavy, but it's a pretty common read, at least in the Quebec education system for like...
Yeah.
I don't know if grade 5 is normal, but I think 7, 8... certainly normal.
Yeah, I remember my teacher. We all thought she was British, but she was Dutch.
It's how they teach you about the Canadian healthcare system. It's because, yes, it's free, but there's only enough spaces for 3 out of 4 of you to get that transplant you need.
At
right?
what cost? Yeah.
If you can't get the transplant, you get stoned to death by the rest. I mean, that's just socialism, baby.
And then the doctor absorbs your life essence so he can help the other people. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. it's free, but sometimes you end up imprisoned in a 67,000 sided diamond for all eternity. Like, whatever.
It's free, but sometimes, you know, we need to take your mythic essence out of you and 25% or 24.999% of the rest of the population, and then give it to an evil earth god. Basically,
someone claiming to be our king shows us a picture of the American healthcare system and is just like, this could be you, and you're like, no, I'll kill everyone you see. I'll kill anyone you want, not that, please.
They don't have the budget to trap us into diamonds. Of course we'll just be stuck in our little Medicare card, you know, in the little window.
Exactly. I'm gonna be one of those fucking scorpions at a gift shop in the plastic cube.
Sarazul had created the Zeomorn with something known as mythic essence. Erzul needed that to show them how they could survive. So they say, rather than killing a quarter of ourselves so you can have their mythic essence and their life force, we'll sacrifice half of our mythic essence, which is kind of vague what a mythic essence was. But the difference in pictures that you guys see, the big guy has his mythic essence. The little guy has lost his mythic, basically. So
they're centaur to beetle, basically.
Yeah, it seems to be like magic power and like things that you can do are the mythic essence is needed to like cast some spells or do some things.
Okay.
So they give up the essence of half of their species. So 32,468 give up their mythic essence. 32,468 don't give up their essence, basically. Okay. Erzul, in exchange, gave the Zeomorn knowledge of something called the Vault Seeds, each of which was capable of creating an immense and secure underground cavern, wherein the Zeomorn could breed various forms of life that might be able to save them from their prophesied doom. So Erzul tells them, you guys need to take these Vault Seeds, go create life, and eventually you guys will get the formulas right if you keep trying, and you'll breed some species of creature which will be able to save you from the doom that's coming.
Okay.
So now their shtick is like, go to places and do genetic experiments on to get life to pop up, basically. Only those Zeomorn who had kept their essence were able to use the vault seeds, so it requires mythic essence to use the vault seeds. So they become known as vault builders. Those who had lost their mythic essence were tasked with upkeep, and so became known as vault keepers.
Okay.
So basically, one of them can use the vault seeds to... the big guys can use the vault seeds to create the vault. And then the little guys will just stay there and kind of tend to the experiments and the life that's kind of growing.
Their hands look very good for mowing the lawn and things like that. Those little
hoeing the garden. They could hoe the garden pretty good. For sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Scratch your back. Oh, that feels nice.
Picking individual seeds out of a pot. Not so much.
No. Yeah. Not so much. No fingers. No digits. Yeah.
Quickly realizing biodiversity in the plane of Earth was too limited to support proper ecosystems within the vaults, the Zeomorn opened portals to the material plane and other planets within it, where they might build these vaults. Cue the Spider-Man meme, the Spider-Man pointing meme, as these two alien races, neither of them native to Galarian, both kind of appear on Galarian around the same time. One is escaping an actual extermination event at the fault of their own hubris and evil, and another one running from the prophecy of one which would supposedly come, which was implanted in them by evil.
Okay.
So, normal shit, right?
Yeah.
At first, things were pretty chill, with the Algothu remaining in Galarian seas and oceans, while the Zeomorn would rule the land. You got fish people, you got rock people. Why can't they coexist, right?
Yeah.
You know, they needed their own Romeo and Juliet, but just it didn't happen. Everybody dies in the end, it turns out.
No, that's the B-52's Rock Lobster is the story of when the rock of the
Wow. Yes,
he is the true messiah to unite all people. The Rock Lobster.
We were listening to that. There's like an extended off-the-radio cut, and by the end, they're just shrieking into
they're
the
just
mic.
Making, like, oh my noises God. Into the mic. It's crazy. So there's a war. Primordial empires go to war. They're like, hey, you know, a rock could never love a lobster. Zeomorns.
A rock can never. I like that. A rock can never love a lobster.
Zeomorns, being rocks, much like lobsters, don't really die in traditional ways. They can't reproduce. When a vault builder approaches what can be described as a natural death, they form a crystal known as a generation stone. From this stone, other vault builders can simply implant the stone into a new body they've molded out of rocks to give the deceased new life. All their memories intact. Like, you didn't really die. You just went into a coma for a bit. They put your hard drive into a new PC rig and you have all your old files.
Okay. Cool.
However, if one is killed and cannot produce the generation stone in time, they're destroyed forever.
Oh my God. Hey guys, not to pull you off topic again, but I will pull us off topic. Did you guys see the? that in England they got these robots that are running off of rats' brain impulses now?
Oh, I did see that. I opened the link and I said, this is horrors beyond comprehension for me. I have to close. Cannot handle it.
Yeah. So they have it linked up and then they have this robot and it like skitters across the floor or like, well, drives across the floor, but. And then it looks like confused because it like keeps backing up and stuff. And I just picture like a tortured rat trying to figure its way around.
Man-made horrors beyond comprehension.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, but I don't like it.
No, me neither. It's awful. I was like, maybe it's just like randomly firing and it's not actually a rat, like, but we don't know, right? And oh man.
I mean, kind of the same concept though. So the vault builders, they voluntarily put their brain into a robot, and who knows how many rats they had to kill to get this technology.
Yeah.
For vault keepers, the little guys, they can be created by vault builders using vault seeds. So they can be created in the vaults, basically. But the number of them can never exceed 32,468. So they're capped, basically. They can never have more than...
I can't
than...
believe there's a fucking server queue for birth. Right?
Need more supply beacons or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's supply cap. So as a result, any long-term war is not really tenable for the Zeomorn, right? They have one. They're stronger class, I guess, or whatever. The stronger people. The Vault Builders are in finite supply. Once they're dead, they're dead forever. Nothing else can create them except for a goddess trapped in a diamond. Then the other ones, you can't make more than a certain number.
It's probably like they're probably very much into duels to resolve issues, I would assume.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The little guys are like, I don't care, right?
Yeah.
So they realize pretty quickly that, you know, war is going to cost them more than these other creatures who conversely don't really care if they live or die because the hole will continue, right? Like another Algothul will be born and will have all the same thoughts and feelings as them. Kind of like in Star Trek, the teleportation technology is like you get vaporized at one point and perfectly recreated at another point, which is just like horrifying in some regards because you're like, how does my consciousness continue from one to the other? But it would seamlessly from everyone else's point of view, right?
And after 8 years, whenever you've replaced every cell in your body, are you the same person that you were eight years ago, or what? Yeah. Like, is there continuity?
The Picard of Theseus.
If you take a ship apart one piece at a time and put it back together, is it the same ship?
The ship of Picard. So they realize like, oh, the Algothul kind of have this edge where like they don't care if they go through the teleporter and are just remade later on. Like it doesn't bother them. So like we're only going to lose this. They leave Galaria at that point. Almost all of them flees the planet except for a few, you know, which you could put in your campaign if you're playing and say like you meet one who's like buried deep underground. He's just like a custodian still working in a vault or something like that.
Cool. Yeah.
In the ensuing years, intelligent life would begin to appear in Galarian in what would come to be known as the Age of Serpents. So finally, life on the planet is starting to get intelligent as well. We've had these two kind of juggernauts have their own little war in the Age of Creation. Now we're moving into the Age of Serpents. So named because of the rise of the Serpentine Naga, who create a sprawling empire and rule over many other creatures, including proto-humans. The Naga, or Wormfolk, as they are derogatorily known, come in a range of varieties who share the same general shape, a long serpentine body with a humanoid head. Now, Naga is...
Oh, that's awful.
So the next spoiler image is an example of a Naga.
A lot of those farming golden pearls in WoW Classic.
Yeah, in World of Warcraft, I mean, they're kind of pervasive through, like, a lot of... fantasy. They come from Buddhist Sanskrit. Tibetism and Taoism, I think. But they're just commonly like these semi divine beings, which are made of like the blend of snake and human, essentially.
I much more imagine the Dommy snake mommies from XCOM 2, and this thing is much much worse.
Yeah. So unlike the Naga in World of Warcraft, these guys don't have arms or like really any semblance of an upper body. It really is just a snake with a head.
Yeah. It is kind of cool just to compare it to like Quetzalcoatl, because it does kind of look like it's got like a feathery headdress. It does look kind of Aztec-y, and it's covered in like jewels and bangles and shit.
My favorite part about adding the pictures for you guys is the details that Pete picks on, because it's always the next beat that it's so often the next beat that I'm gonna.
Sorry.
I honestly love it. Exactly. It's perfect. So,
let me say something too. It looks like I'd want to kiss it on the mouth.
Okay, yeah, like snake tongue.
Yeah.
So
not the next beat, but that's the second beat.
Yes. So they enslaved proto-humans to build their pyramids for them, and they did so by kissing them on the mouth and lips.
Oh, wow.
no, that's last part's true. So they did enslave like a bunch of different races. They enslaved like humans and furries and dark humans, basically.
Damn, 2 out of 3. That sucks.
Yeah. So according to myth, they are the children of the goddess Ravithra, appropriately the goddess of snakes. Ravithra cared for her children and worked to gain slaves to serve the Naga. So we're kind of like teaching them to be evil and teaching them to take slaves. And okay. You don't have hands or arms or thumbs or an upper body. So who's going to build your pyramids? You guys clearly can't. You guys can lie on the ground and be the logs that they roll the giant boulders over, but that's about the best you can hope for.
Ancient snake theorists believe that's how they built Stonehenge.
So the first to serve would be Ravithra's sister, Janicini, the goddess of birds. Janicini created the Garudo, who, if you unclick the next spoiler tag, you will see where those feathered headdresses might have come from. These guys are kind of enemies to each other. So it's bird cool people, essentially. But very, very, like Peter says, Aztecian or like South American fired bird people, essentially. So from the origin of the Garudo, published by Paizo. Legend tells that Janicini made an unwise wager with her sister Ravithra, the goddess of Nagas and snakes. Ravithra cheated, and Janicini lost and became the slave of Ravithra's Naga children. Sudachala, the first of Janicini's Garuda children, offered to complete any task to free his mother. The Nagas demanded a legendary bowl of nectar said to rest atop the tallest mountain in Vudra. Sudachala flew to the mountain and overcame many obstacles to retrieve the bowl. As Sudachala flew back, the god Gruhastha appeared and told Sudachala that the nectar was the elixir of immortality. The wicked Nagas had tried to trick Sudachala into stealing the elixir from the gods' hiding place so they could drink it and live forever. Sudachala alighted in front of the waiting Nagas, placing the bowl on some sedge grass, and the Nagas freed Janicini from servitude, but when the Nagas tried to drink from the bowl, they cut their tongues on the sharp grass, for as Sudachala and Gruhastha had planned, the god had whisked the true elixir away, leaving only an illusion in its place. Since then, Garudas have been the mortal enemies of Nagas. Only the most depraved and outcast Garuda would knowingly associate with any kind of aberrant serpent.
Okay.
So Ravasthini tried to give her children, or Ravithra, sorry, tried to give her children immortality by kidnapping her sister, telling her sister's son, go fetch me this elixir of immortality and feed it to my children. But they were thankfully avoided by another god stepping in and basically intervening. I love that story so much. It's so like classic, like Middle Eastern folklore, like the Tale of the Samur or whatever, or like even like Theseus or something, or Odysseus, you know, traveling and like overcoming these obstacles to achieve this elixir of the gods, only to find that they were tricked by a god all
on
alone.
The kind of Middle Eastern theme there. Janicini, I was just like, oh, that sounds kind of like Janissary, and I googled it. Like, I tried to pull up the clip in the meantime to see if there was some kind of like cheeky Ottoman reference, but in the end, too clever by a half. There is no bird themed shit in any of these Google photos.
Okay, you can look up the legend of Samur, who's a like Middle Eastern bird god, legendary bird. So despite not attaining immortality,
Articuno, Zapdos, Sumor.
Yeah, exactly.
A legendary bird type.
Ahmed Ketchum got him.
So despite not attaining immortality, the Naga still rose to power on the Vudra Peninsula, established a powerful empire. Like I said, they founded their servants elsewhere, not with the Garuda, but with humans, with catfolk, dark humans, things like that. The humans built great palaces and temples where the Nagas could live and be worshipped, while unintentionally teaching humans the secrets of masonry and engineering. So what you guys prophesied before is canonical with these guys. So still in the Age of Serpents, it is held by some scholars that elves also appeared on Galarian. Though that I hated this line where it's there's like lots of talk and there's you know, official sources that say like, oh, it's unclear whether they came from Galarian itself, like evolved organically on the planet, or if they came from the planet's nearest neighbor in the solar system. But in the ancient city of El, on the planet Castrovel, not Galarian, so this is its neighbor planet, basically the Venus of the solar system.
Okay.
It's like way, like according to archaeological records, it's like way older than any elven cities on Galarian. So they're like, we don't know which they came from first, but like one city is like way older and there's no evidence on Galarian that there was elves before then. So I'm going to say Loreboy's canon, they just came from another planet, which is fine for your fantasy setting. Let it happen. So it's likely that they ventured to Galarian somehow during the waning years of the Age of Serpents, settled here without ever really making significant contact with the Naga Empire. They settled someplace called the Fangwood originally, but then kind of spread out. Regardless of their origin, the Elven civilization was one of the earliest civilizations to sprout up that remains to this day in some sense. But surprisingly, and I mean that kind of sincerely, it wasn't too long before a fledgling human civilization would come into contact with them. And why I say surprisingly, because like you don't, in a lot of fantasy settings, it's like, oh, elves are the old ones who've been around forever, you know, and they're immortal, and they had their tree houses before, you know, when we were still smashing rocks together.
Yeah, well, that's because that's because everybody reveres Tolkien, so.
Yeah, exactly. But surprisingly, this fledgling human civilization would come into contact with them, and the period kind of shifts to what's known as the Age of Legend. We're still like, we've gone from prehistory to kind of history now,
okay.
But like ancient history. So this is still like it's 5000 BC in canon, I guess. And I actually didn't look up what the current year is, but probably like 6000 years ago, essentially, from okay. when you would set your campaign if you're just playing kind of more vanilla. So the human empire rises from the Aslanti people. They're little more than small tribes at the time, when one day they are approached by a powerful wizard who says he can teach them how to control magic. So there's just these kind of tribes, and this other human walks up to them and says, like, hey, guys, I figured out this really cool thing, how to make fire. It turns out it's just you snap your fingers and you say a magic word, fire.
All you got to do is kill a quarter of your population. And I'll teach it to you. Yeah.
I mean, so this didn't come for free is the next line I have written, of course. And you may have guessed that in return, the wizards would enslave those humans who didn't have the influence to become spellcasters in their own right.
Son of a bitch!
More enigmatic wizards appeared following the first. These figures would rule this first human empire in many ways. So from what I gather, they're kind of like man behind the curtain, where it's like, hey, you know, we gave you all this power. We're still way more powerful than even your strongest spellcasters. Like, you got to kind of do what we say. And that's going to include, you know, building us some palaces, building us some pyramids, things like that. But it does seem like there are like human-led Aslanti leaders who are like legitimately on the throne. So this was the birth of the Aslanti Empire. It spread wide, even as almost all of mankind, all of its people were enslaved. While the visiting wizard did increase humanity's understanding of magic to an incredible degree, there were still some secrets that he held from them. Like I said, the wizards were like, we're still going to be more powerful. We're not going to teach you everything.
Yeah.
Most notably was glyph magic.
Okay. They withheld math. And they're like, no, damn you.
Pretty much. Then all their pyramids collapsed.
Of course.
So many sides on that pyramid.
They tried to make it out of digons instead of trigons. Oh, man.
So a human visionary named Zin was the first to discover the secrets of glyph magic on his own. And then he showed it to other Aslanti. So he's a revolutionary, basically. They soon discovered that the source of these mysterious wizards was none other than the Al-Gulth, who we did reference earlier as knowing glyph magic. It turns out they've learned how to make themselves appear via illusion magic as humans. And they've kind of been walking and building their own second empire. Here, this is known as the Second Al-Gulthu Empire.
So now they've got the like anglerfish lure that looks like a thinly disguised anglerfish lure with like a wizard cloak on it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a magician. It's like a crappy magician's wand with the flowers that poke out of the end. At the end of the anglerfish's dangle.
That's our art from the E3 episode. E3, not quite, yeah. Like 2017. Like, five years ago.
There's two signatures on that one because that was a funny joke a friend of mine came up with that I just like repurposed and I had him send me a signature for it.
They discover that it's the Al-Gulthu and they say like, that's fucked up. You're like not wizards, you're weird evil fish people and trying to enslave us.
Hate when that happens.
You know,
I've been working without pay for this long and I just figured it out.
Yeah. yada yada yada. The humans are like, okay, no more. We got everything we need from you. Thank you for the help, but you guys got to go. The Al-Gulthu, big on control, don't really like that, but also don't really want all at war. They didn't go well for them last time. And they know there's still a lot more humans than there are Elagolthu. So they're using subterfuge and sabotage this time. They're seeding dissent among the Aslanti and their other human allies. They assassinate leaders. They spy, cheated, steal what they can. But all of it only strengthened the resolve of humans. So anytime, you know, a leader got assassinated, somebody ran on the campaign, no more assassinations by Elagolthu, you know? turned out to be effective, I guess. It seemed like the end of the second Elagolthu Empire was unavoidable. A summit was called, so, you know, G6 summit.
Everybody took their private psychic fish to the the summit to tell us what we were doing wrong.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. It's like we've got a real global crisis on our hands. The slaves are revolting again. So the summit's called. Elagolthu representatives from across all worlds, a council known as here's the one of the last stupid words of the day. Mahal Sthru. Okay? That is MHALSSTHRU. For the scorekeepers at home, that's consonants in a row, LSSTHR.
Mahal Sthru.
So that's the council of like the G6 council of the Elagolthu. We gave
the Elagolthu veto power and we don't know how to take it away from them.
What's stupid, because, like, as near as I can understand, like, a bunch of Elagolthu get together, mash themselves together, you know, carbon into diamond themselves into something that they named Veiled Master. And it seems like these Mahal Sthru are, like, they must be the smarter fish, right? So it's, like, a bunch of Veiled Masters mashed together, and they're like, no, we're done with that naming system. We're going with Mahal Sthru this time. I don't know what, I mean, I'm frustrated by the spelling of some of these words, but I don't know why they went with Veiled Master for the one, you know?
Yeah. Like, at least follow your own fucking rules, right?
Yeah, exactly. So they come up with a plan, the Mahal Sthru, while the humans break ties with them. The humans reclaim Aslant for themselves, and they're driving out any Elagolthu who remain upon the continent that they can find. They weren't actually met with much resistance, though. The Elagolthu are just like, cool, you can have the continent. It's yours. Indeed, unbeknownst, or maybe just unnoticed by most humans, the elves also seem to be leaving many of the forests that they once called home. Many Elagolthu leave Galarian around this time. Some of them venture to the very depths of the seas and just kind of disappear from all contact. The Mahal Sthru gathered its knowledge and wisdom into a lone, single-celled organism, so it has all the knowledge of one of its strongest things. They use magic to put it into a single cell, basically. Okay. The elf diviners and astronomers had foreseen the event that would come to be known as Earthfall. Much like last time, the Elagolthu weren't so chill about all this. they planned to destroy all life on the planet that had turned on them. They said, we can't control you. You got to go, basically. This time, they're not trying to destroy the planet itself, just all life on it. They use their glyphs to reach deep into space and tether a fragment of an unborn planet known as the Star Stone. So it's kind of like you see pictures of Earth circa, you know, 9 billion post-Big Bang. And it's just like a glowing sphere of like molten rock and like constant volcanoes and magma.
And if you tried to eat it, it would taste like pain.
Exactly. Yeah. So they wreath that in destructive magic and slowly begin dragging it towards Galarian, where an impact would destroy all life on the planet.
Why would they wreath it in magic? Would the impact of a second planet not have done enough damage?
So, I mean, to be 100% sure,
it's like having a bomb with a gun taped to it.
Like, so I think a better analogy is taking not a bomb, but like a nuke. They wreath it in radiation.
Okay. So
that anything that happens to survive will be poisoned after the fact.
Okay.
Basically. Which is probably like an actual allegory for weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Thankfully for us, though, the Elagolthu were not the only masters of the Aslanti. So in the millennia or centuries, maybe, that the Empire had kind of been building, they did find some gods to worship. Akavna, their goddess of the moon in battle, obviously, wasn't about to go down without a fight. When she hears about the Elagolthu's plan or realizes what the Elagolthu are planning, She pulls one of Galarian's moons from its orbit just in time to intercept the star stone, but that was not enough. So maybe it slowed the impact, but did not stop it. It also tore the meteor and the moon into millions of pieces and didn't effectively deflect anything. So, I mean, she tried. She tried, right? She's physically manifest to do all this. So she ends up getting pierced by thousands of pieces of debris.
Yeah.
And she sustains the lethal wound. So that's the death of a god. The meteor fragments descend with devastating impact. They wreak havoc on the landscape, continue raining down for weeks. The continent of Aslantel was entirely obliterated. The world was plunged into darkness as ash rose into the sky. Another Aslantel god, Amaznin, distraught by the death of Akavna and seeing the terrible destruction, sacrifices himself to undo the poisonous magic the Algolthu had layered upon the Starstone.
So, I'm sorry. I'm picturing like all this death, destruction, awful history, and then like a bunch of just like slightly pudgy dudes in a circle drinking Mountain Dew and laughing at dice throws. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah, dude.
yes. It's like, are these the gods you worship? Says a guy whose like tits sweat through his shirt. I mean,
not even like the players either, but like the player characters. Anybody who's played in a D&D game, you know, there's always like the, oh, I'm the horny hobbit bard that wants to fuck all the tavern witches or whatever, you know, just like meteors raining down outside, just like, okay, but this is what my character would do, okay? It would be sexist to this barkeep, okay?
I like this part here is taken from like real, in quotes, history. I think the current going theory of the creation of the moon is a planet called Thea crashing into a nascent molten Earth and the debris like having enough gravity to like coalesce into a singular bit, which is our moon now.
Yeah, exactly. So Amaznin manages to save what life remains, including humans, at least a few of them, by undoing the radiation. He had a undo radiation button, but it cost him his life as well. So that's two gods down.
Jeez.
And the impact is still incredible. Even the Algolthu had underestimated its effect. Not only did it destroy or cripple every land-based civilization of the age, even the Algolthu's own society on the ocean floor was devastated by it, though most of them were able to survive by hibernating through the worst.
We decided to crash another planet into this planet, and frankly, we could not have predicted the consequences.
It's a big boom. There's no more sun. The ash cloud would hang over Galarian for 1,000 more years, ushering in what is known simply as the Age of Darkness. And that's, I mean, Pathfinder Part 1, I suppose. Ages 1, 2, 3.5, much like D&D 3.5, I suppose. So thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you like the show, consider leaving us a review on your podcast app of choice. Tell your friends about it, or just shout it from the rooftops, as we say so often. I've been your host, Ethan Palmer. Jamie, is there anything you wanted to plug or add?
Get on the Discord. Discord. Go on Discord.com.
Discord. Just go to Discord.com.
Discord.gg. If you go to our link, look at our links, you can find a way to get in. This is where we hang out. We chat with folks at all times of the day and night. Sometimes you might even be lucky enough to catch a drunk Ethan at 2:30 a.m.
Yeah.
Every once in a while.
Or while we're recording, you might see a picture of me and Jamie doing the civic salute in general chat.
We often post a couple teasers here and there. And if we talk about a meme, drop it just in chat without context. So you could know about an episode before it even goes live. That's pretty crazy.
Bro, can you believe it?
Yeah.
And before we've edited out all of Pete's anti-white racism.
Someone made a WoW guild while we were recording, by the way. Called Giant Virgins, and he's posting in trade chat, Lore Boys of Tychondrius PvP Horde in Shadowlands, recruiting new incels to join the war effort.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Peter, what about you? What's happening on Instagram these days?
At Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram, I'm posting vaccine misinformation and Digimon, apparently. Subscribe to our Patreon to learn more about that, or follow us on Instagram at Lore Boys Podcast to find out the source of that. Montreal Comic Con 2022, still COVID friendly, apparently. Every time I say this every week, it sounds less and less realistic. But first week of July 2022, so I think it's the 7th to the 10th. I'm going to be there. God willing, Ethan and Jamie will be there. Depending on how things go for me, my comic may be partially launched at that point as well, The Black Frontier. So check out Squared Idea on Instagram as well, or check out squaredidea.com. To see what's going on. And otherwise, we've got a fresh merch store, Teespring, I guess. If you Google the Lore Boys on, or Google, if you search the Lore Boys on Teespring, you can find our merch. If you have suggestions, I know, one of our new patrons, Squill, requested something to be put on a shirt. I can generally put it up within a couple of hours, basically. Okay. Like laziness and some like server things combined. If you want it, we can do it. That's basically it. So, yeah.
Yeah, links for everything we've talked about are in the description, including our Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. Thanks so much to anybody who's supported the show in any way, shape, or form up to this point, whether it's leaving a review, whether it's telling your friends, whether it's showing up in Discord and making us feel like we're not crazy, or all of you beautiful patrons who do support us with a bit of cash on the side. Like we said in the bonus episode, don't do it at the cost of a meal. Feed your children first and then subscribe to the Lore Boys. But if you guys have the cash kicking around, we really do appreciate it. Means a lot to
us. Yeah, if you want to donate your children, I do have like kind of a deal going with a wizard where I kind of got to drain some life forces.
Yeah, that Patreon, unfortunately, damn capitalists or damn government has them regulated so they can't do it. But luckily, Lore Boys Prime is run out of international waters, so we have a roaming pirate vessel where we run all transactions through there. So if your payment doesn't go through at first, just keep spamming it. One of them will go through, maybe multiple of them will go through, but send us $3.99 or let us know if you have either pirate booty that we can plunder at your place or children that we can and drain their life force for an evil wizard.
The children thing is so illegal that even international waters doesn't allow it. So we had to make a mast on our ship tall enough that we were not only in international waters, we were in international airspace above
air and water. Air and water. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a twofer. Because what we do is we'll hoist the child up the mast. And then when the international air force shows up, Interpol's air force shows up, we just bring him down real quickly.
Yeah.
And then the boat. So now the Interpol's air force can't do anything about it. And then if the Interpol Navy shows up, we hoist them up the mast.
Yeah.
And then they can't do anything about it.
Really, bureaucracy is what allowed us to drain your child.
Yeah, we bog them down in each other's paperwork so that we can continue selling people.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, trading really, I think, is the more appropriate term because we're not selling them for money. We're selling them for power and empire.
Exactly. We want to get powerful, and we definitely won't become slaves.
Yeah, exactly. So this week's episode sponsored by Wayfair, of course.
Order your new Jamie Ottoman. It's $25,000 for no reason I will ever expect.
Jamie the Janissary Ottoman.
Yeah.
That would constitute a Lore Boys.
Lore Boys. Out into international waters.
Was he from Quebec, the guy who made VLC? I feel like who made VLC?
Vincent Leclerc Consigné.
Is that real?
No, it's Video Land Converter is what VLC stands for.
that was a very Quebecois name.
Yeah, I thought that was real.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.